Ken Langone started out as a hardworking teenager who dug ditches and collected used cardboard. Now he's a billionaire, and he's a business icon, a co-founder of Home Depot, a former director of the New York Stock Exchange, and a world-class philanthropist. It wasn't easy for an Italian-American kid from a blue-collar family to break into the clubby, wasp-dominated world of Wall Street in the late 1950s, but Langone pulled it off, as he explains in his new book, I Love Capitalism, An American Story. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ken Langone to the roundtable this morning. Ken, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Good morning. Nice to be with you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Very nice to have you on the program. At what point did you think, oh, I would like to tell my story? I would like to tell the story in the sense of it being an American story.
I had been urged to write a book by people in the publishing industry three, 4 years ago. And I decided not to write it. And then during the campaign of 2016, when I saw all these kids gravitating to Bernie Sanders, it scared the Jesus out of me. I was frightened to death. If kids are going to give up on what works in this country, what's the future? And by the way, what I accomplished only could have happened in this great country. So while it took effort, it was easy because I was in the right place for it to happen.
So what do you
that's America.
What do you believe that Bernie Sanders represented? I mean, obviously, it was a socialist message, but what do you believe that he represented that scared you to that point?
He represents the notion, let the government do everything for you. Where's the initiative? Where's the self-starters? Where are the opportunities to make things better? There are certain things that government has to do for us and should do for us and must do for us. We need the government to have the military to protect us and defend us. We need the CIA for what they do. We need people that maintain the roads and the sidewalks. We need building codes to make sure that we build buildings that are endurable and safe. There's a million things I can tell you that government needs to do, but not everything. When you take away the incentive for the human condition to do better, nothing's left. Nothing's left. Go to these socialistic countries. They're all over. Go to Russia. Go to Hungary. They're well-intentioned, but guess what? There's something in each of us that's creative, that's different. Some of us manifest that difference, that creativity in one way, others in a different way. But the important thing is don't ever create a system that doesn't motivate people to do their very best. And that's what I'm afraid. The free education, free medicine, free this, free that. Nothing's free. Somebody's got to pay for it. And I think the private sector does a much better job on many things than the public sector. Certainly, look at the VA. Look at the VA today.
Yeah.
You got to ask yourself the question, can't we do better than that? Yeah, we can. You turn the VA over to the private sector and watch the differences. I say that firsthand because we're part of the VA system through NYU. We staff the VA hospital. And by the way, this VA hospital here in Manhattan is magnificent. But the docs and all the professionals come from NYU. They're staffed by NYU doctors. So there's a possibility for hybrid. And by the way, NYU is not for profit. We're not a profit-making hospital. We were there as a part of a magnificent university to do research, teaching, and training. And we do it in all categories well. But the point I'm making is don't sell the human condition short. And that's what socialism does.
Do you believe that, I know you supported President Trump during the campaign in 2016, do you have any...
Well, let me make this clear. I voted for him.
You voted for him.
Because I had no choice but to vote for Donald Trump. And I was surprised, as anybody else was, on election night. Okay?
Yeah.
So early on I supported Chris Christie, and of course he didn't make the cut. And then I supported John Kasich, and he dropped out. And at the end of the day, I believe that Donald Trump would be better than Hillary Clinton. And so far, I feel like I'm being vindicated. But time, you know, it takes time.
Now,
get it all.
When you say you're being vindicated, do you believe you have no remorse in the vote that you cast on that November day in 2016?
Given the choice I had, absolutely not.
Not given the choice you had. Just, I mean, of the person voted in a vote,
that's what we're doing. We're exercising our right to choose.
Yes.
I had a choice, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Well, that is true. But you're also supporting a candidate at that point, correct?
But when you say supporting him, I voted for him.
Yeah. So you don't regret voting for him.
I'll tell you, one episode alone, seeing those three men freed from Korea last week vindicates my vote, in my opinion.
Now, you also...
Bringing those people home?
Yes. Now, you also supported Andrew Cuomo, correct?
Yes, I voted for Andrew Cuomo when he ran for governor. Yes, I did.
Now, would you vote for him? Would you vote for him again? Would you support him this time around?
Depends on who he's running against.
Yeah.
Look, let me say this to you. I am not blind into anything I do. To me, I hope I prove my point. The greatest president that ever lived, in my opinion, was Harry Truman. There will never be a president like Harry Truman ever again, in my opinion. I'm sure people are going to push back and argue with me. But I think what that man did in 7 years, and remember when he came in, the concern, oh, my God, this guy, he went bankrupt with a clothing store in Independence, Missouri, and now he's president. Look at the magnificent and momentous decisions he made, one after the other, after the other, after the other. You may not agree with a lot of them or all of them or any of them, but the fact is he was a man who understood the buck stopped here, as he had so aptly put on his desk.
So
what I'm telling you is, I'm for what's good for America, in my opinion. I love this country. Nothing would have happened to me that happened to me if I had not been born in America. I asked my grandfather, who could barely understand English, and he couldn't even read Italian or English when he died. He was illiterate. I had my mother ask my grandfather one Sunday during World War II, had he ever been back to Italy? And my mother asked him and translated, and she said, no. He said, why would he go back? There was nothing there for him. That's why he left. Never went back to Italy once. He came here. The proudest day of his life was the Memorial Day parades, when he put on his Sons of Italy cap and marched in the parade. This, I can assure you, the subtitle, An American Story, it's the truth. This is about America, not about me.
I want to ask you, there's a large portion of the book dedicated to, well, not large, but it's a nice chunk, about dealing with Elliot Spitzer. We talked to you from, we're based here in Albany, New York, so obviously this is a story that I find quite interesting. So your troubles with Elliot Spitzer began when?
It began when Elliot Spitzer, I was on the board of the New York Stock Exchange. We were, understand, not a not-for-profit. We weren't a charity. We were a nonprofit. We paid sales taxes. We paid real estate taxes. We paid income taxes. Not-for-profits don't pay those. We were entirely owned by the members of the New York Stock Exchange. We were duly elected by the members of the New York Stock Exchange to be board members of the exchange, and we were empowered on their behalf to run the place, the board. Dick Grasso had one significant difference than every other former chairman of the exchange. Most chairmen of the exchange usually end up in that job after they have had a successful career someplace else. Jim Needham, Bill Donaldson, Donaldson Lufkin, and then he went to the government, and then he came back to the exchange. Mel Batten was running J.C. Penney. He retired, and he came up here. Dick Grasso went to work for the New York Stock Exchange as a union clerk, starting wage $82 a week. And he worked his way all the way from that to chairman and CEO of the exchange. Now, he had 33 years of service. The formula was in place before we all got there. This package, this pay program, was created in 1982, 18 years before. And it was created so the exchange would be able to create programs to motivate people to stay at the exchange, to have a career there. Dick was the epitome of that goal. Dick had 33 years of service. Bill Donaldson had five. Every year of service is 2.5%. So Bill Donaldson had a 12.5% factor. Dick Grasso had over an 80% factor because of the years of service he had. And when you put that against the formula they had in place for pay and SERPs and CESP and all these plans they had, the number worked out to be what Dick got paid. Now, Spitzer all of a sudden decides, I don't like that. And he, on his own, decides that he's going to come after us in his capacity as Attorney General of the state of New York, even though he had no authority over nonprofits. We weren't a charity. As I said, we paid when we were getting ready for Y2K, remember the big scare?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are we going to have a glitch? We spent $1 billion on technology. We paid $80 million in sales tax. Not-for-profits don't pay sales taxes. We paid real estate taxes on our buildings. We paid income taxes on the profits we made as an organization. So Spitzer shows up and has this grand circus that he had. And I just said to myself, wait a minute. Hold it. This is wrong. He goes to my lawyer and he says to my lawyer, look, he brought a case against Dick because Dick got the money. He brought a case against the exchange because the exchange gave him the money. And he brought a case against me because he said I misled my committee members. Okay?
Yeah.
So now Spitzer goes to war. My lawyer calls me up on a Friday afternoon and says, Elliot Spitzer says, unless you settle today, he's going to bring charges on Monday. I said, Gary, my lawyer was Gary Naftalis. I said, Gary, I want you to remember one thing. The next time I hear the word settle out of your mouth, you're fired. It's over. Okay?
Yeah.
You go in there and you tell him, if the world through a jury wants to say I did something wrong, I'll argue that I didn't, but I'll never admit to doing something wrong that I know I didn't do. Now, it turned out, thank God, it doesn't hurt that your adversary is also an evil human being, because that's what he was. We know how he conducted his life. We know what he did to his family. We know how he humiliated his wife when he had to get out there and admit that he had this dalliance with hookers, and he made his poor wife stand next to him. At least give Bill Clinton credit for one thing. When he got nailed over Monroe Lewinsky, Hillary was nowhere around.
You say in the book, as for Spitzer, I feel he deserves every bad thing that happened to him.
Absolutely. And you don't want to know something? I'll be very honest. My faith dictates forgiveness. I worry that the fact that I can't forgive this man, because, by the way, he made me into a folk hero.
Right.
But the careers he destroyed of young people is disgraceful. He literally destroyed careers of young people for headlines for himself. I said that we all have our own private hells. I hope his is hotter than everybody else's, and I mean that. Look at this guy Schneiderman now. Is this the best we can do? Of course, you don't know, son. These guys are crafty. They're able to hide these private lives they have.
Now,
think about that.
That story surprised so many people. I mean, even people in the press corps here in Albany, most people were surprised by that story. By Schneiderman.
Guess what? Somebody must have known something because it didn't take long for this kid that wrote the article for New York to come out with it, New Yorker.
Well, of course, and then the question that you even bring up in the book is, what did you know about Spitzer?
I knew one thing. When he accused me of misleading people,
yeah,
I knew he was lying. Because I didn't mislead anybody. Everybody on the exchange on a comp committee was fully apprised of how all these numbers worked. Every single one. And I'll tell you why I can say that emphatically. Because when it came time to consider Dick's pay package, If a member of the committee couldn't make the committee meeting, I would send the head of HR and his assistant to that person, that member's office there where they worked, and have them give them a rundown of what we were going to talk about at the committee meeting and what we were going to recommend. Every single member knew it. And there was a wonderful woman on the board by the name of Carol Bartz. And when we had the meeting, the final meeting where they voted 13-7 to fire Dick, she said, wait a minute. She said, this man never asked us for anything. We gave him all this. We gave him his bonuses. This is how it works, your bonus and your salary. We gave him all of his pay increases. We did it. We should resign, not him.
Mm.
And by the way, every single vote on Dick's pay package was always unanimous.
Well, this is just one of the amazing stories that you tell in the book. It is, it's quite a read. I could talk to you for a lot longer, sir. I'm sorry our time has ended, but it's...
Well, I appreciate this, and you wanted to focus on that episode in my life. I can only tell you right now, I've never felt better about myself than when I stared authority and power in the face and said, you want to fight? You got to fight. I could have lost, okay, but thank God I didn't. And by the way, the highest court of the state of New York, by a vote of 7-0, said Mr. Spitzer had no standing in that case at all. None.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you were vindicated.
Yes, I was. You know what was vindicated? People standing up to authority. This guy Schneiderman, I know firsthand, he was a bully, a little bully. He pushed people around. He threatened people. I mean, look, we better start asking ourselves the question, shouldn't we understand our leaders better than we do?
Is there somebody you see on the horizon who you think would make a good New York Attorney General?
I don't know enough of them to know. You don't forget, you got to be politically practical, too. For all intents and purposes, New York State is a heavy blue state. And I mean, I would argue that the Republican Party, for all intents and purposes, barely exists in New York State. So I think the burden is on those people and the other side to make sure they come up with people who are worthy of the job. I do know this. There were times when we had him. We had Louis Lefkowitz, who was a superb attorney general. Jacob Javits. I can go right down the list of all these people. Andrew Cuomo was outstanding and fair, okay? And that's why did I vote for Andrew Cuomo for governor? Because I had an exposure to him when he was attorney general. He was fair, he was open-minded, and he was respectful. Mr. Spitzer had the audacity to tell somebody, to tell me he was going to put a spike through my heart. And when a guy came and told me Spitzer told him this, I said, you go back and tell Spitzer it better be steel because wood will break.
So are you, and you make no bones about this. I mean, you say this in the book, it wasn't a great time for you, but by the same token, you come out of all of these things stronger, don't you?
God, good luck and a great upbringing. Okay?
Yeah.
All those things. I was taught by my parents that the most precious thing you have is your reputation. I have a strong faith in God. I'm a very devout Catholic. And if I have to choose between smart and luck, I'll take luck every time.
Do you, when you look at your accomplishments, whether it be with Home Depot, with your business now, I mean, is this, you're still doing what you want to do. You're still living as a capitalist and loving it.
Every day. And more importantly, I want to make this point. I'm not a self-made man. You look at Bernie and Arthur and Pat Farrah at Home Depot. You look at Ross Perot at EDS. You look at Mitch Hart at EDS. You look at Tom Water at EDS. You look at Alan Mebane at the textile company. You look at Tommy Teague, my partner in the truck leasing business. I am not. There are people out there who say they're self-made, and they may very well be. I'm not challenging them. I can only speak for myself. I'm anything but self-made. The number of people that have helped me to get to where I got today. In fact, I've tried to make an effort in the book. If you look at the acknowledgement section, I've listed it, and I pray to God I didn't leave anybody out. But I can tell you, I am not self-made in any way. I've had the blessing of being around a lot of wonderful, capable people.
Well, the name of the book is I Love Capitalism, An American Story. Ken Langone is the co-founder of The Home Depot and, more importantly, the author of this very, very interesting book. Ken, what a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you so much for taking me in and letting me chat with you. And as I say, I hope I make myself clear. We live in the greatest country on this earth. There'll never be another America ever again.
Indeed. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much, Joe. Bye.
Again, Ken Langone's book is I Love Capitalism, An American Story. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.